In January 1979, two figures stepped into the spotlight who would reshape our reality. In Tehran, Ayatollah Khomeini descended from his plane to crowds exceeding a million, promising to purge all foreign influence. Across the world, in Britain, Margaret Thatcher quoted St. Francis about bringing harmony while preparing to unleash economic revolution. These twin messiahs, one religious, one political, didn't just change policy. They opened the floodgates to an era where feelings trumped facts, where mysticism masqueraded as wisdom, and where the sleep of reason brought forth monsters. What happened next wasn't a simple political shift. It was a wholesale retreat from the Enlightenment project that had defined modernity. Suddenly, newspaper horoscopes became investment advice. Books about angels outsold serious literature. Witches protested the World Trade Organization with Harry Potter banners. The Observer called this cultural moment one requiring bullshit's enema number one, and they weren't wrong. We'd entered an age where paranoid fantasies about government control shared disturbing similarities with the thinking that drove Timothy McVeigh to bomb Oklahoma City. When societies abandon evidence-based reasoning, the vacuum doesn't stay empty long. The economic revolution of 1979 sold itself as hard-headed realism, but it was mysticism dressed in pinstripes. Reagan and Thatcher preached a gospel: cut taxes for the wealthy and prosperity will rain down on everyone. It was economic voodoo, and we're still living with the hangover. The results? Reagan ballooned America's federal debt from $900 billion to over $3 trillion in 8 years. Unemployment hit 10%. Average families saw their leisure time plummet from 26 hours weekly to barely 16, while incomes stagnated. Blue-collar wages declined as employers threatened to ship jobs overseas. When the deregulated savings and loan industry collapsed, costing taxpayers $1.4 trillion, the same politicians who preached against government interference suddenly lined up for bailouts. Meanwhile, ideologues insisted this was natural selection at work. Social Darwinism returned, arguing market forces were as inevitable as gravity. Except, gravity doesn't require trillion-dollar government rescues when it fails. The invisible hand needed a very visible safety net, but only for the wealthy. For everyone else, there was stern mice to work harder and stop complaining. Into this anxious landscape stepped the self-help industrial complex, promising abundance through positive thinking. Deepak Chopra appeared on Oprah in 1993, earning over $20 million annually by declaring, "Affluence is simply our natural state. Wealth reflected spiritual development. Poverty was merely mindset." The formula was simple. Animal metaphors, numbered lists, 7 habits, 5 keys, sophisticated jargon, re-engineering, benchmarking, and charismatic speakers. Anthony Robbins amassed $80 million. Stephen Covey's consultancy generated $400 million. By century's end, the industry was worth $2.48 billion. Even governments bought in. Tony Blair increased spending on management consultants by 50%, reaching $550 million annually. Edward de Bono was hired to develop bright ideas using his 6 thinking hats, which he called the first new way of thinking in 2,400 years. Yet when gurus identified real-world examples, results embarrassed. Tom Peters' In Search of Excellence celebrated exemplary companies. Most declined within 5 years. He pivoted quickly, writing Thriving on Chaos and declaring, "There are no excellent companies. The hustle never stops when there's money to be made from desperation." As the millennium approached, intellectuals competed to declare endings. Francis Fukuyama announced the end of history. Western liberal democracy was humanity's final form. Never mind that history kept happening. The theory was too elegant, too flattering to Western vanity to let facts interfere. Samuel Huntington countered with his Clash of Civilizations, dividing humanity into 7 or 8 groups destined for eternal conflict. His West versus the Rest worldview ignored that most wars happen within civilizations, not between them. Both theories reduced complex human affairs to simplistic narratives that policymakers devoured like life rafts, even when they were actually anchors. Meanwhile, postmodernists dominated academia, teaching that reality required quotation marks. Michel Foucault praised Khomeini's Iranian regime, claiming its different regime of truth made suppressing dissent acceptable. The relativism was absolute, until Holocaust denier David Irving sued historian Deborah Lipstadt. Richard Evans exposed Irving's fabrications through old-fashioned source-checking. Facts, it turned out, still mattered. Some truths remain stubbornly objective, immune to deconstruction. Remember Chicken Little, convinced the sky was falling after an acorn struck her head? In 1962, visitors to the Griffith Observatory panicked during a harmless planetary alignment. 20 years later, a best-selling book predicted this alignment would trigger massive Los Angeles earthquakes. Scientists debunked it immediately, yet media revived the scare and terrified calls flooded the observatory. This wasn't fringe behavior. It was mainstream America. A study found 48% of Wall Street stockbrokers used horoscopes for investment decisions. President Reagan and Nancy consulted astrologer Joan Quigley for virtually every major move and decision. The alien invasion obsession peaked in 1995 when grainy footage allegedly showed military doctors autopsying aliens from the 1947 Roswell incident. Television networks worldwide broadcast this evidence. Even respected journalists declared it the first hard evidence. The truth? Two karaoke video producers shot the film in a barn using orange peels for alien eyes and chicken guts from a local butcher. We'd become so hungry for wonder that we'd believe anything as long as it promised we weren't alone in an indifferent universe. God became central to American politics during the Cold War, transforming the fight against communism into a crusade against atheism. Billy Graham warned that communism is inspired, directed, and motivated by the devil himself. Reagan called the Soviet Union an evil empire. The religious rights theology took peculiar turns. Jerry Falwell championed Israel, declaring, "Whoever stands against Israel stands against God, not from love of Jews, but because his premillennialist theology required Israel's rebuilding for the mass conversion of Jews during the Second Coming." When Ayatollah Khomeini issued his fatwa against Salman Rushdie in 1989, religious conservatives sided with Iran. Pat Buchanan condemned the satanic verses as a blasphemous assault on the faith of hundreds of millions. After the Cold War, America needed new enemies. Japan briefly filled the void. A 1990 poll showed 60% of Americans considered Japanese economic power the critical threat. Post 9/11, the defense industry thrived on the war on terror, with Bush proposing a $396 billion defense budget exceeding the next 15 highest spending countries combined. The enemies shift capriciously. Iran was evil, then we sold them arms, then Saddam was evil, then we armed him against Iran, then he became the Hitler of the Gulf. The only constant is the need for an enemy. In 1981, philosopher Alasdair MacIntyre's After Virtue became a surprise bestseller by declaring the Enlightenment a catastrophe. Critics blamed Enlightenment rationalism for Nazi atrocities, ignoring that Hitler emerged from the Romantic tradition opposing Enlightenment values, and that human rights concepts condemning Nazi crimes came directly from Enlightenment philosophers. The real transformation was emotional. Reagan's presidency became the era of good feelings. Al Gore calculated emotional displays, describing his son's near-fatal accident and sister's death from lung cancer in excruciating detail, despite previously boasting to tobacco farmers about growing tobacco. After Diana's death, Professor Anthony O'Hare suggested the reaction lacked proportion and was savaged as a rat-faced little loser by the Daily Mirror. His pillorying confirmed we'd entered an age where feeling trumped thinking. IMF data reveals the shift's cost. 1950 to 1973 produced average annual growth in per capita GDP of 2.9%, twice the neoliberal era that followed. Yet, we cling to failed orthodoxies because admitting error feels like defeat. The Enlightenment didn't fail us. We failed it by abandoning reason for comforting illusions.